Hello and welcome to 100 Campaigns That Change the World. I'm Steve Tibbett and today I'm talking about Marcus Rashford's school meals campaign, otherwise known as hashtag End Child Food Poverty campaign, with Joe Ralling from the Food Foundation. And Joe is a campaign and media executive. She helped run the campaign for the Food Foundation. And she previously worked also with Jamie Oliver on various food campaigns, but notably also with Marcus Rashford on the campaign that we're talking about here. Marcus Rashford, for those who don't know, is an English professional footballer who plays for Manchester United and England. And he has launched and been involved with quite a few campaigns, but most notably this one that we're talking about today on child food poverty. The Food Foundation spearheads the End Child Food Poverty Coalition, which consists of a group of more than 30 organisations supporting the call from Marcus Rashford for the government to improve the diets and food access of children in low-income families. So, yeah, I think Joe's provided some really interesting insights, and in particular in this type of situation where you suddenly catapulted into superstardom, or with superstardom, into the heights of getting everyone's attention. So I think that's quite an important, interesting aspect of this conversation. Here's Joe and the Marcus Rashford End Child Food Poverty campaign. Welcome, Joe.
Hello, and very lovely to be here.
So, Joe, can you just say a little bit about sort of how the campaign started and then in the run-up to Marcus Rashford getting involved? So what was the little story that started the campaign?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, it all started back in 2018, really, when a wonderful woman called Lindsay Graham and my current boss, Anna Taylor, had a conversation. Lindsay is a campaigner from Scotland. She's an ex-nurse and she is passionate about child poverty in Scotland. They had a conversation and identified in that conversation that really no one had ever captured, they'd spoken to children and captured children's voice about food poverty and what it was like to be hungry. So we got some funding and we launched the Children's Future Food Inquiry, and we went around the UK and spoke to over 400 children in all kinds of different settings and wrote a report. And through that process, we identified a small group of children who we recognised really wanted to do more. And we decided that what we would do is take that small group and make them our food ambassadors, our young food ambassadors. So we had a report that we were going to deliver to government. But we also had this group of young citizens who were passionate about what they were seeing in their everyday life. Either they'd experienced hunger themselves or they'd seen it in their schools. And about that time, Emma Thompson, the actress, one of my absolute heroes, she's been amazing and she's been an incredible loyal supporter to this work. Emma became involved and we had a big launch, took the report to Downing Street, had a wonderful day with our young food ambassadors and Emma standing on the door of Downing Street, handing over the report. And we were absolutely assured that, it would be read and taken seriously. And that's really where it started. And from that point, we started really working with citizens' voice. And I think that is still the heart and soul of what we've done. The campaign has come a long way. And we've achieved quite a lot. There's still an awful lot more to do. But that was the beginnings of it. But I think that idea of listening to children and capturing children's voices. And we had an extraordinary event at Parliament, actually, and I'll never forget the day. We had a whole bunch of MPs. We'd invited them to come to an inquiry event. And we had MPs in the room and SPADs and researchers. And we brought our young food ambassadors in and they presented evidence. And I remember there was a 12-year-old girl who sat and was asked, you know, have you ever experienced not having enough to eat at school? And she, in a very, very innocent way, I don't think she understood the power of what she was delivering, but she just sat there and described how she used to hold her tummy during lessons to stop it grumbling, and how she used to press her tummy to stop it grumbling because she didn't want people to know how poor she was. And that moment, every MP in that room was absolutely shocked, and we knew that that event and that moment had had such poignance. And I don't think we do enough of really listening to the people who are affected by food poverty. And I think that's something that the Food Foundation has really tried to do the whole way through.
And so, and that, on the one hand, it's shocking to hear, you know, some of the stats on child food poverty, but also it's also a big issue, and it's something that, you know, it takes a lot to tackle. You know, if you were to genuinely end child food poverty, you know, the lots of things would have to change. So how did you work out what you were going to ask for first, if you like, versus like all the other things that might have to change? Was there a process that you went through?
Well, you're absolutely right. There are multiple, and it's a complicated problem. What's wrong with the food system is complicated. You know, it's you know, you can look at the manufacturers, you can look at the actual food we're eating, you can look at the nutritional value, you can look at the price of vegetables, but you know, really poverty is at the heart and soul of a lot of this, and you know, that people don't have an access to have a healthy and affordable diet. And what I've really learned going on this journey is that it's not through ignorance. You know, I mean, most mums around this country are desperate to feed their children well, but the barriers to doing that are enormous. You know, they don't have enough money to buy fresh fruit and vegetables from retailers because the prices are too high. Now, with soaring gas and electricity costs, you know, quite often they can't afford to turn the cooker on. They haven't got enough money to put on the gas meter. Yeah. So cooking at home becomes a challenge. So it's cheaper to go down the chip shop or get a takeaway in. And of course, then we know that we're into the world of takeaway food, ultra processed, the nutritional value. You know, if you go down to a supermarket and buy a frozen lasagna, it may say vegetable on it, but there's rarely a vegetable in it, or certainly not enough vegetables. So, but it's not through the families not wanting to do the right thing. It's through the barriers and the food environment that they live in. A lot of families live a long way from the supermarket where they might get a cheaper deal, or the food market, but they haven't got cars, they haven't got transport. And if you've got kids at home, and you know, you just end up in the chip shop or in whatever the convenience store is on your estate. So it's very complicated. To answer your question, how did we decide what to campaign for? We're a very data and research-driven organization. And I think it's one of the strengths of our campaign is that we do rigorous work with academics, we do surveys, and we are absolutely bolts and braces about what we put out. And that gives us a respect of government and business that we've become a go-to. They trust us. We're a trusted source. So what we did was look for the things that we knew were going to make a difference, but using evidence. Henry Dimbleby, he was an advisor to the government at the time, and he'd just written something called the National Food Strategy, which was a weighty piece that he'd been invited by government to write the National Food Strategy, and we'd advised on it. And we used his recommendations as the things that we would campaign on, that would be the absolute heart of our campaigning, because we knew that the rigor and the structure and the research behind those policy asks was there and was robust. So we really worked with Henry to identify, for the End Child Food Poverty campaign, to identify, and it was three main things that we came up with. One was free school meals, which remains absolutely core to what we are believe in. And that's where children who are from low incomes go to school and actually don't have to pay for their lunch. They get a free school meal. because extraordinary in this country, but school food is still means tested. You know, you don't go to school and get asked to see, well, can you afford to go to a maths lesson or can you afford to use that pencil? But you do get judged on whether you've got enough money to get a free school meal or not. So free school meals is something we fundamentally believe in. There's also a scheme in the UK called Healthy Start, which is a scheme where families get vouchers in the first 4 years of a child's life to help them buy fruit and vegetables and milk. And actually, surprisingly, when we started this campaign, there was only 60% uptake. So 40% of families who were entitled to it weren't getting it. So we campaigned to get the value of that up and also just for the government to tell people it existed. And when the government didn't, we did a lot of that ourselves. I'm proud to say it's now at 77%. So we have had a lot of impact. And the third thing was during the school holidays, there was a huge number of children who were going hungry during the school holidays because they may have got fed during the school term, but during the holidays, there was no provision. So we campaigned very strongly for holiday activity and food programs to be set up by the government to feed those hungry children during the holidays.
And because it was during this period or the after the first period of the campaign that the footballer Marcus Rashford joined the campaign. But can you say a bit about the story? Because it's not quite, certainly when you said, told me before, it wasn't quite what I thought had happened, which is what often happens with organisations that they reach out to a celebrity to try and recruit them as their campaigner. But that wasn't quite what happened here, was it?
No, it was, I mean, as I say, Emma and our young food ambassadors have been doing a lot of campaigning and we had, my job at the time was head of communications at the Food Foundation. I'm now head of campaigns. I've morphed into a slightly different role. But my job was to deal with the press and the media. And I remember when I first started at the Food Foundation, if I got 70 media hits in a year, that was considered incredibly good. So we did have our stuff out there. And with Emma's help, we were doing all right. But, you know, government weren't really listening. And despite the fact we delivered our inquiry reports, government wasn't listening. We definitely didn't feel we were seeing a lot of movement at that point. And then basically what had happened was that the government had announced that they were going to stop the holiday, but there was a voucher scheme in place at the time. They weren't going to extend the holiday voucher over the school holidays. And Marcus Rashford is a young, he was 22 at the time, footballer. He has played for Manchester United his whole life. And he was playing for England. He's a top Premier League player. But he grew up in poverty in Withenshaw in Manchester. And Marcus could see what was going on in his local community. And he heard that the government weren't going to extend the vouchers. And he just took it upon himself to write a letter to the Prime Minister. But he included some of our data in the letter.
So you didn't know that he was going to write to the Prime Minister, did you?
No, we didn't actually. We were delighted.
Yes.
When the news broke. And we were even more delighted when a few days later they got in contact with us and said, you know, we clearly want to do more. We need help to work out what to do. And by this stage, the story had gone nuts in the media. And it was all over every paper that Marcus had written to the Prime Minister. So yeah. At that point, we engaged. I mean, it was an extraordinary opportunity for us because the media were covering the story 24/7. I mean,
yeah, it was absolutely.
Steve, I remember the days. I mean, it was quite a surreal time for me. We were a very small charity in those days. I mean, we're not much bigger now, but we were really small and it was just me, you know, and suddenly the phone would be going at 4 a.m, you know, and it would be some press room, you know, the news desk had just started at 4 a.m. and they were going, can you put us through to your press department? And I'm going, well, that's me and the tabby cat. I'm sitting in, you know, and there I was sitting in bed at 4 a.m. and the phone did not stop. It was an extraordinary time. But we moved fast. We worked with Marcus and his agent and it was, and we worked out exactly what Marcus was going to be calling for. We matched it with what the Food Foundation was calling for in the National Food Strategy. And forward we went and it was, and it still remains. I mean, I think it changed how the nation thought about things. I I think his involvement and awareness went through the roof. But yes. I also think there was, to go back to that citizen's voice thing, there's an authenticity to Marcus's voice,
yes,
which the government couldn't ignore. There was a very well-spoken, polite 22-year-old footballer who was basically saying, "Hello, Mr. Prime Minister, I know you know there's a problem and I'm sure you want to do something about it. Let's do something." And but not letting them off. He was his, but it was the power of his, the fact he had been through and experienced it himself, and he could speak, and he could speak on behalf of the children. And it was, because he was only 22 himself, I think it was incredibly, it was the power of that authenticity, which I still think was probably the reason why it cut through quite so much.
Did you worry, worry is the wrong word, but how did you talk to Marcus about how he was going to talk about the issues? Because, for a while there, he was the face of the campaign and he was front and center of everything. And obviously when the media rang you, they probably wanted to speak to Marcus Rashford if they could, if they were allowed. But how did you make sure that he said the right things, or, you know, didn't go off message? Or, because, you know, I've also worked with celebrities, and it sometimes can be a bit of a double-edged sword that they sort of go off on a tangent, or they talk about this or that, and they're not delivering the message that you hope they might. Was that ever a problem with Marcus?
Never. He is a very thoughtful and considered young man, I think. My experience of, I only met him a few times. I mean, most of the stuff we were doing was, we're talking about COVID time, so a lot of it was done on Zoom calls or through his agent, who was extremely good. But what I would say was he listened. He really listens and he really absorbs. You know, one of the times I did spend time with Marcus, we took some of our young food ambassadors and Emma up to meet him, and the BBC were filming a documentary at the time about Marcus's, well, we thought at the time it was going to be about his campaigning work. In fact, the BBC made it a bit broader in the end. But and we went up to Manchester with some of our young food ambassadors, and you know what it's like. You're setting up a TV moment, and we were waiting for Marcus to come back. He was going to come and meet the young food ambassadors after training, so we were all there waiting to meet him. And he walked in, and he just sat and listened to them, and he absorbs. He's very thoughtful. He absorbs. He really listens. So, no, I never worried about what Marcus was going to say. And I think he was being very well advised. But also, we made very sure he had the right facts and stats.
Yeah.
That was the power of what we did, that we made sure he had the ammunition he needed. Mm. So when he spoke to the Prime Minister, which is what was happening, it was Boris at the time, and Boris was ringing him up, and we made sure that he knew what to ask for, which the policy asked to ask for, and also the evidence he needed to prove the point. But what we did was interesting.
Yeah, I know. I was going to ask about, another thing that strikes me, which is maybe unusual about the position you were in, is, as you said, you were going from being a good campaign that was getting some attention to being catapulted into stratospheric attention. Did you and your colleagues sort of ever panic about how do we make the most of this? How do we get the maximum amount of sort of political change out of this moment? Or is it more that you're just sort of, it's sort of happening live and you're just sort of running to catch it? How did you manage to sort of deal with that moment?
I wish I could sit here today, Steve, and say it was all mapped out. We planned it all. It was a 2-year strategy. That's not what happened. We were nimble. We were fast. We kept on reinventing ourselves and trying new things. But what we did when Marcus came on board was particularly interesting, and I think it's worth talking about. We came up with this idea of the task force. The End Child Food Poverty Task Force. And that, again, I think came from Marcus saying, this isn't all about me. It's not just me calling for this. We need a broader base of support for this. And what we did was we convened a whole load of NGOs and charities, because there are some amazing people and organisations who've organisations who've been working in this field for years. Marcus had just raised the bar. You know, he'd got a moment in time with the media and with government. But, you know, there are fantastic organisations who've been working in this field for years. You know, Barnardo's and Sustain and Save the Children. And so we convened the NGOs and all the charities, because what was important was we were all beating the same drum. And then with Marcus's team, we brought together a lot of businesses. So this task force had two clear sides. It had the NGO community and it had the businesses. So we brought the retailers in and we brought really big players that would not normally be calling and supporting for a child poverty campaign. But what was interesting about that was we were proving to the government, especially at the time we had a conservative government here, we still do have a conservative government, but was that everybody wants this. It's not just the sort of lefty NGO community that want this. The business community want this as well. And actually that bringing of everyone together. And then when we were doing different beats of the campaign, there were times when we, you know, if we were doing a petition, we might call on all the medical community to push out the petition one week. So we'd be talking to the Royal College of Midwives or the WI, or and then the next week we'd be talking to the education community. So we'd be getting the teachers and the teachers' unions. And the so we brought in as many different sides to this as we possibly could. Because child poverty and child hunger is not an issue which should be about one thing.
No.
It is so morally shocking that in this day and age in the UK, we have children going hungry. It is something that is socially unacceptable. So we basically, what we were doing was really mapping out to government that this was, and hopefully creating a space that was safe enough for them to do something about it, because it wasn't going to be anti-business or anti, you know, that actually everybody wanted this. So for God's sake, just get on and do something. That was the space we were trying to create for them. And I think it was successful.
We'll be back in a few moments with Joe Welling talking about the End Child Food Poverty campaign. Welcome back. We're here with Joe Welling talking about the End Child Food Poverty campaign. And Joe, we were talking about the sort of successes that the campaign had started to have, certainly getting the attention of the government, the media, etc. And then you were talking also about some of the other people you've worked with. What were the specific mechanisms for delivering the campaign? You know, what happened next after that initial sort of phase of superstardom? Being touched by superstardom?
We turned to some more traditional forms of campaigning. We launched a petition and we were, obviously we had Marcus's following and we had Emma on board, but we also got a lot of other amazing high profile celebrity support as well. You know, we had Jamie Oliver and Tom Kerridge, Hugh Fenny Whittingstall. So we launched a petition, which is a very, you know, well-trod route for campaigns, but we got over 1 million signatures. In this country, if you get over 100,000 signatures, and it's the petitions on the government, a government website, you force a debate in Parliament. Well, we got over 1 million signatures. So we used some of those mechanisms. We used social media in order to push out our campaign message. And we were fairly hard hitting with our social assets. You know, we used snippets of Back to Those Children's Voices. We used snippets of children talking about hunger or what it was like when they were feeling hungry at school or how hard it was for them to concentrate. Because we know that kids who don't eat in school can't concentrate. They can't learn. They can't learn properly. And we know that their education outcomes are far worse. And, you know, that has a lifelong effect on them. So it's not just their health that's affected. You know, they're looking at a future of diet-related diseases and obesity. But they're also looking at lower life outcomes. So if you don't get your exam results, it's harder for you to move forward and have a strong contribution to society. And actually, interestingly, one of the mechanisms we use, which is a campaign tool that we talk a lot about framing in when we're making a campaign strategy. And we needed to change how government looked at free school meals, because free school meals with the Conservative government that we had was seen as money that it was free handouts. It was charity. And we needed to change that narrative into, no, it's an investment into the future economy of this country. Because if you feed kids in school, they're going to do better and they're going to go on to take their position in society and be able to contribute to society economically. So we did some PwC did some economic mapping for us, an analysis, and we proved that for every pound you invest in a free school meal, society benefits. It was 1.88 pounds back. I mean, it was a very clear evidence that, you know, it's not a free handout. So we took the economic analysis that had been done, and with the help of a couple of amazing agencies, we started creating social media campaigns. Weber Shandwick and PLMR, who need a shout out here because they've both given extraordinary amounts of their time for free over the last 8 years, and pro bono support, which has been incredibly helpful to us. So, but one of the things we did was we went out and we found members of society who you wouldn't have expected to be on a free school meal. So we spoke to an investment banker. We got someone quite high up in the civil service. We got a head teacher to all record a short clip for social media saying, without a free school meal, I wouldn't be where I am today. I wouldn't be an investment banker. I wouldn't be a CEO of a company. To try and show the policymakers that actually investing in kids' food is an investment into the economy. And that was really playing into, you know, how we believe that the Conservative Party looked at free school meals, right, to try and change the narrative. And I think that was something we did quite successfully. So that was one part. Free Made Me became our social media campaign for a while. And it was just surprising. You didn't expect to hear from an investment banker
at this point, because I can, you know, it's very clear that, you know, you're trying to frame this whole thing as something that's cross-party. You know, it's, in a way, it's a no-brainer because it's you know, it pays for itself plus more, and also it's a question of just, you know, basic social justice, you know, that everyone can agree with. Did you ever get pushback from other parties or other individuals? You know, that there are people out there who don't, as you said, don't like handouts and stuff like that. Did you ever feel that there was any voices that were putting their heads above the parapet that you had to kind of counter?
There is always, sadly and tragically, whenever you do something on social media, and whenever our very wonderful food ambassadors do things on social media, there is normally an element of trolling and nasty commenting.
Right.
And we have to work very hard to protect them and look after them. When that happens, it is part of the, Marcus himself experienced some awful criticism from, you know, chunks of society who did not believe he should be doing this. They thought he should just be playing football. Get back to the day job was the kind of, you know. So, yes, I mean, we certainly experienced that. I would say that a lot of the policymakers took a lot of convincing, but there became a point where we had so much momentum and that it was very difficult for them to ignore us. And that was what I think one of the things I've learned is tenacity. You have to keep going. A campaign like this can't ever stop. And I think the fact that we just, you know, I think wherever we've got to with free school meals, and we've had some success. I mean, various bits of the country have now rolled out universal free school meals. I mean, it's a bizarre situation right now where, you know, London, Scotland and Wales have got free school meals, but the rest of the country haven't. Mm. I mean, but, you know, that's a result of our campaigning. And I'm, you know, I do feel we've had success. And I think it's it's a difficult situation for a government now, when why has London got it and not the rest of the country, you know? Mm. So, yes, we have, of course. But I think our job as campaigners is to convince the people who don't believe, you know, in a way. You know, I think people did, when we started this, there were huge swathes of
who didn't understand that children really did go hungry in the UK in this 2018. I mean, you know, when we first started, I mean, I think there's the sort of bits of the media, you know, I mean, I would have really struggled to get some of our more right-wing press to cover these issues. Well, by the end of it, they were phoning me up and asking me what they should be covering next week. So awareness had gone, and I think that, you know, a BBC documentary, you know, you get a lot of coverage. The work we did with the media, you know, Marcus Rashford and all the other celebrities, huge amount of, you know, this isn't just a, it's certainly been a, you know, and all the other NGOs, everyone's worked together. I mean, amazing partnerships have been created through this campaign. But we also did things which were quite unusual. You know, there was a half term, I remember specifically, when the government announced that they weren't going to give the kids a voucher over half term, and those children were clearly going to go hungry. And in about 3 days, we built a digital map and we said, look, the government are not going to feed these children. Who is? And we built this digital map and we pushed it out on social media. And within about 24 hours, 1,500 dots around the country had appeared on this map. And it was little cafes and schools and businesses going, we'll have food out for the children. We'll open our pub doors and we'll give kids free food. And it was an extraordinary moment. Now, it's not a sustainable way of feeding our children, you know, having pubs opening up at lunchtime and offering them free food, or having a cafe making extra rounds of sandwiches. I mean, clearly that is not what should happen. But it absolutely illustrated to the government that this was, you know, people care. People don't want kids in their street going hungry. They don't want, you know, and they're prepared to make sandwiches and leave them out, you know, take them to the local cafe rather than that happen. But it was a wonderful, I mean, we were very nimble. We were fast-footed. We were, and that as a campaign tool, watching all those little spots appear on the map, I remember it was a really exciting time, but very unusual way to do things. I mean, you know, it's not a normal way of laying out your campaign strategy.
And in Parliament, you presumably had some sort of parliamentary strategy. At what point did that reach critical mass, and how did you manage to achieve that?
We clearly have a cohort of MPs cross-party who do support us now, and we use those relationships. I don't remember there being a moment when suddenly we thought, oh, we've got people on side. I think it was a growing and evolving thing. We've had core parliamentarians who stuck with us from the beginning, but it grows. We've done a lot of parliamentary events. We've done some quite fun ones. Again, I think doing things creatively, let's call it, but doing things in a way that it has been really core to what we do. We did a wonderful parliamentary event 18 months ago where we invited Parliament. We had our young food ambassadors, and we were working with other organisations. We brought a whole load of young people together, and we invited the parliamentarians and policymakers to come and have free school lunch. And we called it the Superpower of Free School Meals event. And Tom Kerridge and Melissa Helmsley were there. Tom, who's been an incredible supporter as well, right the way down the line. Tom Kerridge is one of our chefs.
Yeah.
And Melissa, another chef. They came. And as all the MPs and the parliamentarians and the civil servants arrived, we handed them a token. And half of them qualified for a free school meal.
Mm.
But a third of them didn't. So I didn't add up so hard. Sorry, two-thirds of them got a free school meal and a third of them didn't. And so the ones who got a lovely, hot, healthy, nutritious meal off Tom, everyone was happy. But the others had to go over and sit in another corner, and they just got a sort of slightly measly pat lunch. And what we were trying to do was make the parliamentarians experience what it's like if you're a kid at school when you're sitting there with a really boring sandwich or just not quite enough to eat, and you're watching your friends on the other side of the school canteen eating a lovely hot meal. And that's what happens in our schools every day, and we wanted them to experience it. But we did it with humour. We did it in a, you know, an environment that opened conversation, and the young people sat and chatted to them, and we didn't you know, we did it with a lot of an atmosphere of fun. But that was one. That was a really powerful day.
This perhaps is an unfair question, Joe, but I'm going to ask it anyway. Do you think if you didn't have access to an internationally famous footballer, lots of celebrity chefs and a famous actress, do you think you could have made the changes that you've made? I mean, I'm not obviously it would have been harder to get the attention, but do you think you could have? I'm just thinking about, you know, other campaigners who may not be able to access those kind of stars.
Mm. I absolutely think we could have, because I think the power of the citizen's voice, and when you get the story, when you get real people's stories, there is nothing more powerful. I come from a TV background. I made documentaries for many, many years, and I know the power of telling and opening the door and showing what it's really like. We absolutely, working with those young people, working, you know, gathering evidence, you know, and filming and recording Citizen's Voice, we could have achieved a lot. We did a partnership with the Evening Standard at one point. It was one of the reasons that our campaign, that Sadiq Khan, the mayor of London, decided to roll out free school meals in London, was a campaign, part of our campaign when we worked with the Evening Standard. And that part, that the Evening Standard printed about, I think it was 26 articles over a period of time, all about child poverty and free school meals and what was going on across the city. And that they spoke to head teachers about the fact that kids were stealing food out of the bins at school and what was going on in the schools and how kids were fainting in classrooms. And, you know, that was absolutely around storytelling and bringing the truth behind the closed doors out into the open. And I think that material is as powerful as a celebrity getting up and endorsing. What happens with the celebrity is you get the reach. It's about the, you know, the size of their social media, or the fact that, you know, you might get a news station. And we work very hard, you know, if Tom agrees to go and do something in the news for us, we'll always try and get a young food ambassador or a citizen or a real family or a, and I'm very lucky to work with the celebrity support I do, because they really want those citizens' voices out as well. They know it's not about, they know it, you know, it's not, they're not doing it for themselves. They are doing it to get, so that these children get fed, or it's easier for families. And, but so I do think we would have achieved a huge amount with citizens' voice, but I also think having your facts and your stats and your, I mean, one of the things that happened was obviously we were working during a pandemic and, you know, we started tracking food insecurity and food prices, and we have clear graphs showing the levels, and the fact we had very robust research from the academics we work with has also been a vital cog. So no, I don't think you need the celebrities to create a powerful campaign, but I think it helps with your reach. I think you've got to make a really powerful social media asset. You've got to have your campaign tools in order, and then what a celebrity can do is help you spread it.
Well, Joe, I really appreciate all of those thoughts and telling all those stories. That was really, really interesting for me. So yeah, thanks a lot. Thanks for coming in today.
Thank you very much for having me.
Thank you for listening to this episode of 100 Campaigns That Changed the World. I'm Steve Tibbett, and I will see you again next time. Please feel free to subscribe, give me a 5-star review or a 4-star review. I don't really mind. Any review is fine. Well, 5 stars is better though. And we will see you on the next one. Thanks a lot and goodbye.